This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We do not have a lockdown or anything of that sort here in Tanzania. Let us work. When those other countries are done with their lockdowns, they will want to come to us. We will allow them and even give them food.
That's Tanzania's President John Magufuli, who reacted angrily to Kenya's move to close their borders to keep COVID-19 pandemic from spreading. Details coming up. Also, Lesotho has a new prime minister. South Sudan's vice president tests positive for the coronavirus. And Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa is hosting a four-nation summit today on Mozambique's urgent security situation. All these and more next on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Thomas Thabane has resigned as Lesotho's prime minister. A Reuters report indicates Thabane's resignation today came 3 months after police named him and his current wife as suspects in the murder of his former wife in a case that has transfixed the Southern African nation. His own party, opposition figures, and South African mediators have all been pressing Thabane to step down over the murder case. Gunmen shot dead his previous wife, Lipolelo, on June 14, 2017, just 2 days before he took office. Reuters reports that Finance Minister Mokesi Majoro will be named by Parliament as Thabane's replacement. He is expected to be sworn in tomorrow. In a television address to the nation, the 80-year-old Thabane said the time to retire and leave public life has arrived. Lawmakers have said Thabane was not offered immunity from prosecution in return for stepping down, so it remains unclear whether he will face charges. Tanzanian President John Magufuli has reacted angrily to Kenya's move to close their border to keep the COVID-19 pandemic from spreading. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Magufuli's combative remarks come in the wake of simmering diplomatic tensions after Kenya closed its borders with Tanzania and Somalia.
Hakuna lockdown au baba yake na lockdown au ndugu yake na lockdown. Hayupo Tanzania. Sisi tuchape kazi. Watakapo maliza kujiroko kule, watakuja huku tutawasaidia chakula.
He says, we do not have a lockdown or anything of that sort here in Tanzania. Let us work. When those other countries are done with their lockdowns, they will want to come to us. We will allow them and even give them food. We are truly committed to a regional development agenda, but when it comes to solving a problem, everyone has their own ways of dealing with it.
Tunashikamana katika kuleta maendeleo, lakini katika kutatua tatizo, kila mtu ana njia zake za kutatua.
Some say the border closures are necessary but will hurt trade. Ruth Warutere is a program officer with the Eastern African Sub-Regional Support Initiative for the Advancement of Women, a non-profit organization that supports female traders across the region. She says the border closures are seriously affecting small-scale cross-border businesses.
First of all, there's a loss of livelihood for these women. They will not be able to sell their products. They will not be able to feed their families. At the Namanga border, for example, we have the women traders who deal in bidwa. They cross over to the other side and they sell. Now, if the border is closed, it means that these women will not be able to cross over to the other side to sell their goods.
Warutere is urging reconsideration for the border closures.
I would wish that the borders would be opened to allow at least the small-scale traders to continue trading. What is surprising is that we've only been looking at the big traders. For example, between the Uganda-Kenya borders, the trucks have been being allowed to move. But the small-scale trader who cannot cross, who cannot be able to fill that truck, has not been operating. And that means people are languishing in poverty.
The Tanzanian leader has come under condemnation from his critics and the international community for his government's lukewarm response to the global pandemic. The U.S. Embassy in Dar es Salaam said it was concerned over unreported and exponential growth of COVID-19 cases in the country. This week, the United Kingdom announced plans to use a special flight tomorrow to evacuate its citizens in the East African country and said it expected high demand for the seats. In Tanzania, some 509 persons have officially been confirmed to have the virus, with 21 deaths. Globally, governments and health authorities are racing against time to slow the spread of the COVID-19. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan's Vice President Riek Machar and his wife, Defense Minister Angelina Teny, have tested positive for the coronavirus. According to a Reuters report, a number of his office staff and bodyguards have also tested positive for COVID-19. The vice president appeared on state television saying he would be in self-isolation for 14 days in his residence. Experts worry that decades of conflict have left South Sudan incapable of dealing with a surge of new infections. So far, South Sudan has recorded 347 cases of the coronavirus, with 6 deaths. Egypt is witnessing a steady rise in coronavirus infections in spite of early imposed curfews and social distancing guidelines. The Egyptian government said it was relying on people's awareness, but the Egyptian people failed the test. While the numbers of infected people is rising, the government is planning a gradual opening of the economy by mid-June. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi spoke with Saeed Sadek, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, about these developments.
The government job, and why we need a government, because the government should put order in society, should keep and protect society. People give up their freedom to the government so that it can protect people. So you cannot just depend on the will of the people, because the will of the people can be wrong. People can make wrong choices, can underestimate the trouble they are facing. So it is very important that the government takes the lead, imposes law, and enforces the law. Now, when you have poverty, when you have high illiteracy rate, when you have the economic impact of a long lockdown, this will definitely make people unwilling to accept any restrictions unless the government enforces them, like a curfew that has to be imposed, like a certain number of people working. All those things are being done, and so Egypt has no other option but to do that.
What do you make of curfews at night and crowded markets and public transportation during the day?
There are two reasons. One is poverty is rising. Before Corona, I had 33% of Egyptians below poverty line. Today, this may have risen until 70%. There's high unemployment, there's high poverty. There is also customs and traditions. People cannot be kept in a lockdown in small houses for a long time. One of the problems that Egypt is facing is overpopulation. People can have 6 or 7 children, so they live in a very small flat. And so people cannot stay for a long time in this small flat, so they have to go out. And one of the entertainment that would relieve the lockdown tension is going to the market, seeing people, mixing with people. And because the government does not know how to organize those public markets in a proper way, how many should enter, how they should be entering, should they be wearing a mask or not, that's why it continues. And traditions die hard anyway.
What's your assessment of the Egyptian media efforts to educate the public about the coronavirus outbreak?
Even before the corona, Egyptians depended on 4 sources for information. One is national media, 2 foreign media, 3 Ikhwan and Qatari media, and 3 is social media. All of them are informing the people about what is happening, but with different agenda. And that's why people sometimes are confused. There is some exaggeration in some media. There is underestimation of the situation in other media. So the public opinion remains confused, but they choose what they see fitting them and what they can afford. So the national media are doing their best, but they are not the only one in the arena. Public opinion is also witnessing and seeing other sources, and this is the problem.
How do you explain the government plan to gradually open the country in mid-June when the numbers of infected people in Egypt is on the rise?
This is a global trend. many governments, they are opening up. Europe, the states, everybody is doing that because of the economic consequences of lockdown. It has been very heavy in many countries. More people die from hunger, poverty, unemployment than corona. So the Egyptian government, like many governments, have no other option but to try to play a balanced act. But they have to, at the same time, when they are taking precautionary measures like wearing masks as mandatory, that they have to provide them at affordable prices. They have to make regulations regarding how many people should be inside a supermarket at a certain hour, how many should go out, how long they should stay, so that others can enter. They have to make a lot of regulations and organization, and this is a big problem that has to be done. Also remember that we have many feasts are coming, like the feast at the end of Ramadan. People usually socially are used to make family visits. They have to now replace it with modern communication methods, like using Skype, like Tango and other type of communication, so that they can see each other virtually. But
that
not
was Saeed Sadek, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa is hosting a four-nation summit today on Mozambique's urgent security situation. Estimates put the death toll from an Islamist insurgency in the country's oil-rich north at 2,000 to 3,000, with up to 160,000 people displaced from their homes. The conflict has been going on for years, but the government just addressed it publicly. Mnangagwa will be hosting the presidents of Mozambique, Zambia, and Botswana. Some worrying reports have linked the local militants to Islamic State, with some coming from outside the country. Others doubt outside influence. The conflict has spawned hunger in the region due to the difficulty of fishing or farming amid conflict. Mercenaries have also joined the conflict amid speculation that blue-chip energy companies might be employing them to fight the militants. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has announced he will start easing the coronavirus lockdown on June 2nd. Museveni hopes that by then every Ugandan will have acquired a free government standard face mask to wear in public as a way of stemming the spread of COVID-19. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda is set to distribute free masks so its citizens can comply with mandatory use in public as part of the COVID-19 lockdown exit strategy. A new government policy says anyone without a face mask in public risks punishment, effective today. Museveni says distribution of masks will allow him to lift the ban on public and private transport as part of easing the lockdown that has lasted 49 days.
We shall allow the regulated opening of public transport means of minibuses, buses, taxis, provided they carry only a half of their normal capacity. After you get the masks, because you must wait for the masks.
Museveni says every Ugandan will have the free face mask within 2 weeks.
Since many people were expressing concern that they cannot afford to buy these masks, and also the government wanted to ensure quality and to ensure that people don't start borrowing masks from one another, the government has decided to provide these masks free of charge to all Ugandans of 6 years and above.
Security personnel enforcing the lockdown have warned the public against breaching the lockdown and curfew. Fred Enanga is the Uganda police spokesperson.
So the instruction is these other sectors whose restrictions were lifted yesterday are not going to resume business until after the massive saturation of the facial masks countrywide.
This comes at a time the public is decrying lack of food as they stay at home. Activist Stella Nyanzi is among those who have been arrested protesting the continued lockdown. She took to the streets to express her dismay before police rounded her up.
I want food! I come with women and young men because we want food! We want food! Our children are hungry! The government has not given us food! I want food for my children!
Museveni has eased the ban on some businesses, including hotels, restaurants and general merchandise shops outside malls, and eased the lockdown on schools, with some students allowed back to school. However, all that also is contingent on the massive distribution of the free face masks. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Manufacturers and importers in Nigeria are having difficulties getting foreign exchange to do business because of the collapse in oil prices. Analysts suggest that one way is to diversify the country's external earnings. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
Manufacturers and importers in Nigeria are not finding it easy to acquire foreign exchange. A worldwide collapse in oil prices has sharply cut the amount of foreign currency, particularly US dollars, coming into the country. And that makes it difficult for companies to import necessary goods, including equipment for the oil industry, medical supplies, and raw materials needed for production. More than 80% of Nigeria's foreign earnings come from oil sales. The global coronavirus pandemic has slashed demand for oil, and when the price fell below $30 a barrel, it took a toll on the economy. Bolahan Taiwo is the regional economist of Stanbic IBTC Bank for West Africa. He says the oil price crash is being compounded as some foreign investors are taking their money out of the country.
In oil prices, it tends to always affect those sentiments where you now start to see foreign portfolio investors take out their money from the country, and foreign portfolio inflows will now turn to inflows, to outflows rather. So that's what we have seen, and we've seen that consistently over the past 8 to 9 months, where we've seen foreign portfolio investors take out their dollars from the country, and that has impacted the external reserves.
Taiwo says the government should encourage manufacturers to look inward and start producing goods domestically instead of importing them. And he says Nigeria needs to find other goods to export to earn foreign exchange.
Nigeria needs to diversify its export base, whether it's in the agricultural sector, gas, steel and mining and all of that. Those are other sectors that Nigeria could seek to develop and gain comparative advantage in and be able to diversify its export base.
The Central Bank of Nigeria says it will provide $100 million to commercial banks to help parents pay school fees and to allow small and medium enterprises, SMEs, to make essential imports. The bank said its assistance to smaller companies is needed to revamp economic activities across the country. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
Zimbabweans in South Africa have added their voices to the call from their country's main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, for South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who currently chairs the African Union, to intervene in continued human rights abuses in Zimbabwe. The call follows the recent abduction and brutalization of an opposition legislator and two other women by alleged state security agents, as well as the extreme assault of two women by police in the city of Bulawayo. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg. Close to 50 similar incidents have been reported since President Emmerson Mnangagwa took office. Zimbabwe's government has denied any involvement in the incidents.
Zimbabweans in South Africa say the shocking images of several assaulted women should compel Ramaphosa to take action.
It's so difficult. That's why now we need the international community to help us. This is why the United Nations must help us. This is why SADC and AU, President Ramaphosa, please lead us, help us, help us, help ourselves. We are going to stand as Zimbabweans. But ultimately, we need an international hand.
One of the latest abuse cases involved two sisters from the city of Bulawayo, who say police severely beat them on their backs, thighs, and buttocks for going out to buy food during COVID-19 lockdown. They say they will have permanent scars. Mxolisi Ncube, spokesperson of the newly formed the Patriotic Front Party, says an urgent all-inclusive dialogue is needed.
We therefore call upon the international community, the SATAC and the African Union, to make sure that whatever intervention is put in place, it is targeted at every political role player in Zimbabwe right now, the civic society as well, and even churches, so that whatever outcome is achieved should be beneficial to the people of Zimbabwe as a whole, not only a few people fighting for certain positions.
The latest incident involved three females, MDC Alliance Member of Parliament Joanna Mamumbe, and two party members. They say they were arrested in the capital Harare as they left a demonstration by party supporters, then tortured and assaulted before being dumped in the countryside. Trustin Dlovu, chairman of the MDC Alliance in South Africa, says the abductions mean Zimbabwe can no longer remain a member of the African Union in good standing.
We are not asking for guns and bombs from you, Mr. President Ramaphosa. We are simply asking you to stand up and condemn acts of violence, acts of human rights violations, acts of rape, acts of abductions. President Ramaphosa, kindly stand up.
Ramaphosa's office did not immediately respond. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.